Hello and welcome back to Tasty Debrief. This week we are continuing with our look at Season 8 of Game of Thrones, and shall be discussing the fourth episode of the season, The Last of the Starks. Let's tuck in. The night is dark and full of spoilers, so if you care about spoilers or haven't seen the episode, pause this now, go watch it, and then come back and join us. We are starting with one of the biggest points of the episode, at the walls of King's Landing with Missandei.
It was such an upsetting death. But it, like, was not worth it either. Like, Missandei's been with Daenerys, like, from the start, and she was just offed really quickly, like it was nothing. And, like, I get that she's always kind of been a secondary character, but she's always been massively significant for Daenerys. And I think it should have been... Like, Daenerys should have at least reacted a bit more to it. All of the emotion of the scene was focused on, like, Tyrion and Grey Worm.
I also hate the fact that Game of Thrones seems to be moving away from the gore. With that shot of Missandei, we don't see a proper taking her head off. It's taking away that almost satisfaction of seeing it happen. We just see an out of focus in the background, head chop off and drop.
We don't even see the body after, because it's just in the background behind Tyrion, just out of focus. You can kind of see like a lump of person with like a slowly expanding red smudge. And Tyrion's, like, the acting in that scene from Peter Dinklage is brilliant as well, because he's like, you can see he's properly hurt about it. And I thought he would like look back at Missandei and we'd see like have a last look like we have with every other character that's died this season. But we just didn't. We just did, like, that's the end. That's it for Missandei.
And they leave her body there.
Yeah, that was the thing that confused me. I was like, surely Grey Worm would go get her.
Like, I understand that they may be like, oh, we're going to shoot them with arrows. But at that point, Cersei's already established she's not going to shoot them. Take the body.
Also, like, didn't they all walk away? Like, everyone atop the wall walked off?
I'm not sure.
I'm fairly certain, like, at least sort of Cersei and the Mountain and Qyburn and stuff. I'm fairly certain they all just sort of, not Qyburn, because he was down with Tyrion. But, like, I'm pretty sure they all sort of turned and walked away immediately after Missandei's body fell. I was like, at that point, you know, Cersei's not there to give the order to kill you anyway. Just, like, go get Missandei. Yeah, it seems like sort of all of the characters after the Battle of Winterfell kind of, like, lost a little bit of motivation, which is understandable for all the characters that were in the North at that battle, but Cersei had nothing to do with it. And it kind of feels like given up on being Cersei a little bit. Like, it's kind of like she's just fighting for the throne now just to be sort of vindictive and spiteful. Also, how did they know that she even had Missandei? Because the only sort of information they had was that Missandei didn't wash up on the beach. There was no indication of, like, no one sent a raven. Daenerys didn't get any sort of snotty message from Cersei being like, ah, I got you, girl, you know? It was just kind of, well, she didn't wash up, so Cersei definitely has her. Whereas I'm fairly certain, like, most of the crew that was knocked off those boats did not wash up. There was, like, 8 of them on the beach.
So the whole Missandei at the gates of King's Landing scene, I had a big problem with. Because the whole time I was thinking, what are you doing, you stupid people, standing out here in the open while Cersei is pointing archers and big crossbows at you? I understand that meeting and doing a sort of exchange is a real historical thing that people did, but not with Cersei. Cersei is the sort of character who would absolutely go, ah, hello, thank you for meeting me, now kill them, and then she dives down for cover and everybody just gets killed.
It's definitely, like, you can tell that Daenerys is taking charge of the tactics because they're all terrible. Daenerys has made a point of, like, refusing to listen to Sansa. First in the Battle of Winterfell, when Sansa gave her specific directions and were ignored. And also with, like, the power struggle over who's having the North when all this is over. Like, Sansa's very clearly right about that. Like, the North has always been a Stark place. It should go to the Starks. But then, again, you've got, like, Sansa was like, yo, give the guys a rest before you march them all down to King's Landing. And Daenerys said no. And then 10 seconds later, Rhaegar's dead, Missandei's dead, Grey Worm's very upset. Like, you can tell that Daenerys is leaning away from the kind of strong but reasonable ruler that we thought she was going to be and leaning very much into sort of Mad King territory now. Where other characters have developed, like Cersei has definitely learned from Tywin and, like, from her plot with Robert and all of that kind of stuff. Like, she's definitely learned and become more sort of tactful and more evil, whereas Daenerys just hasn't. She's just slowly losing advisors and isn't taking on any new ones.
Cersei and Euron have a weird relationship.
Yeah, it's not a terribly comfortable thing to watch, but it's interesting. I'll give it that. I don't know how I feel about the baby situation. I'm not sure how Euron's going to feel about the baby situation. Because Cersei told him, what, like 6 hours or something before they arrived in King's Landing that she was preggers? Or, like, it might have been a few days. Like, Game of Thrones time's a bit weird. But, like, definitely told him long after Tyrion worked it out. And then Tyrion rocks up to the wall and is like, do this for your baby. Like, do the right thing for your baby that I know you're having. That baby that you told me about. And I'm sure Euron must be up there thinking, how does he know? He's going to work out that either that baby isn't his or Cersei's lying to somebody. And he's proved himself to be sort of quite vengeful when he's lied to. I don't know. I kind of want to see how it plays out next episode. If he works out that, like, she's been lying to him. Well, like, especially now that Jaime's heading down to King's Landing as well, I think there's going to be a weird face-off of, like, no, it's my baby.
If Jaime makes it that far, one dragon down now, Bronn could not be happy about that, and he's already said he's happy to kill Jaime.
Bronn, what happened to Bronn? He's got, like, he's, like, manic, twitchy, insane person Bronn now. Like, he was always so cool and so chill. Like, Tyrion faced him with the problem of, like, would you kill a child? No questions asked. And he said, no, I first asked, like, how much they'd pay me. He's always taken such a, like, chill stance on every, like, horrendous scenario. And now he's, like, rocked up with this crossbow that killed Tywin and is, like... Like, he talks crazy fast and he's all, like, weird and trigger-happy and it's like, not the Bronn that we know, but we also haven't really seen enough character development to justify that. It just looks like Bronn went mental.
He's not really got any beef with Tyrion or Jaime. You know, he's worked for both of them in the past and he's not really come out of it tremendously, but he's ended up becoming a knight with land and quite a lot of gold. Dude's doing all right for himself because of the two of them. You know, every interaction he's ever had, you know, Tyrion, he's worked for and got paid for it. That's his whole deal, is like, yeah, I'll do work, but you'll pay me. And then he helped train Jaime and he got paid for it.
I think that's an interesting thing about Bronn's character, because weirdly in his head, I feel like they have done him wrong by becoming his friend. And because he's not used to having friends, he's used to being the cutthroat who just gains things and then moves on and gets another job. He will be paid a lot of money and gain a very important castle if he does this job. And I think that's kind of where his manic nature is coming from, this internal battle with him and, like, his natural personality and the fact that he now has friends.
I don't know that he considers them friends. Like, he's always been, like... He's never treated either Lannister brother with, like, the level of respect that you would expect from someone in their employ. Like, he's always just kind of been completely... like, indifferent to all of that, to all of the names and the titles and the money. Like, he's only concerned about money as far as it can help him. And I don't think he really considers either of them friends. I just think he considers them sort of the lesser of two evils when compared with Cersei.
Because what he's planning on doing during the scene makes a lot of sense. You know, it's totally Bronn's character to remember a throwaway line that Tyrion said ages ago, you know, if anybody pays you to kill me, I'll pay you double. Of course he's going to remember that. But yeah, that's I can hold him to that. I can actually get some more money out of this. Whoa. So his motivation for the scene's really good. It's just, I'm not sure if it's a direction choice or an actor's choice. It's strange though.
Moving from one insane person to another, like what the hell was Jaime on this episode? Don't understand it at all. It seemed like he'd sort of finally worked himself out. They've built to this big redemption arc for so long, and like one mention of his sister and he's back to square one.
It is a bit weird, but like they have that weird connection. I think that's what they were aiming for, but it was a bit of a jumping character. It's like you love all this character progress, well, forget about it.
So I've seen a lot of sort of fan theories online, Twitter especially, being like, no, he still loves Brienne, he's just gone off to sort of find Cersei and kill her before she gets the chance to kill Brienne, which doesn't make any sense to me. It's all like, Jaime has always been sort of begrudgingly respectful of Brienne's talents as a fighter and her ability to look after herself. And even in the scene where he lost his hands, like right before that, he didn't step in until he realized that actually she physically couldn't fight her way out of that situation. He's always waited and always given her the chance to fight for herself first, and then to have him just sort of ride off into the distance like he's gone to sort of preemptively save Brienne, like, I don't think that's what's happening. I think they've literally taken all of Jaime's character progress and just thrown him back to square one, which is sort of a real sort of wheel in the spokes for other characters' development as well. Like, this was a massive thing for Brienne. Like, he was her first, and she's, like, in those episodes, she's just started, like, drinking more than she regularly would. Like, she's just started sort of letting go and becoming comfortable in herself as a knight and as a fighter alongside all these other people who are so comfortable in their own skins. And then Jaime's just kind of stomped all over that. I'm so mad about the fact that he reduced one of the best female fighters in Westeros, in the whole show, to a lady standing outside in her housecoat crying because her boyfriend left her.
I'm interested to see where this one resolves as well. Like, I have no idea how this is going to culminate, whether it is going to be that Jaime kills Cersei, like a lot of fan theories are going along, or if it's going to be interesting to see the next scene with Jaime and Cersei in interacting.
Personally, I hate that scene because Brienne didn't act how I expected her to act in that situation. She blubbed. That's not the Brienne we'd expect. Yeah, sure, show emotion, let her cry. But she'd hit Jaime. She wouldn't just be like, no, don't go, and kind of stroke him. She'd be like, don't go, why are you doing this to me?
When I first saw that scene, sort of, when I worked out when it, like, the. When I first saw that scene and I worked out sort of where it was going and what Jaime's intentions were, I really genuinely thought that it was going to be a challenge of Brienne's honour. I thought, like, she's sworn to protect the Stark girls and the Stark house, and she's, like, the only way for her to do that in that situation is to stop him going. I thought it was going to be a callback to, like, when they first met and she was going to have to take him prisoner again, but it would be so much harder for her this time around because of all the emotion she's built up for him. It just seems really sort of disappointing and very un-Brienne. Brienne has always been sort of stiff upper lip, we can deal with this, move on, take the hit, keep going. With Renly, like, she was in love with Renly, and Renly died, and her immediate thought was, okay, so now my mission is this. I'm pledged to this. She never broke down. There was never, when Renly died, she didn't sort of collapse in a heap and cry. She just sort of powered through, and I thought that that was going to be where this scene would go with Jaime, and it seems a real sort of step back in her character to then just have her sort of break down and cry.
But at least Jaime and Brienne got to have, like, an interaction and goodbye, unlike Jon and Ghost.
Poor Ghost. He was so sort of neglected this season.
Justice for Ghost.
Justice for Ghost. I'm really unhappy about it. Like, Jon hugged Gilly, and he sort of doesn't really know, he hasn't seen her since she was at the Wall, really. Like, I know she's been around Winterfell, but we've never seen them in a scene together. And, like, Ghost has been there from the beginning, like, literally the first episode, and is always at Jon's side. It's, like, a big character thing for Ghost, is that he's always by Jon, except on those, like, that one time he got sort of sent off for something.
I understand that the show's on a budgetary constraint, and having Ghost and the dragons and all the big battles, it's just too... it's difficult. But they just had a big battle, and they could have given Ghost a really dramatic send-off with him dying protecting Jon. But for Jon to just go, I don't really want to take him south. Can you have him? I don't want to clear up after him anymore. He's a bit of a faff, to be honest. So unceremonious for two characters that are supposed to share a bond. You know, they're introduced and it's like, oh, look, this is the runt of the litter. You know, you've got a bond with this character. Make sure you keep them close. Jon's the only one who's managed to keep his wall. Everyone else lost theirs.
And now it's, like, really difficult to pick out the parts of him that make him Jon Snow, if that makes sense. Like, he's always going to be a sort of reluctant leader. But a big part of his character was his tie to Ghost through them both being sort of outcasts, don't look like the rest of their family, don't fit in quite as well. And the fact that he just sort of sent Ghost off so unceremoniously with Tormund, like... It's like the puppy's grown up and he's not as cute now that he's a big dog. And it was just, it was one of those weird things where, like, he didn't even have to touch Ghost. Like, there's the bit where Ghost reappears after being gone so long in seasons previous. Like, I don't think Jon touched him then either. He sort of just crouched down in front of him and they had a nice sort of eye-to-eye moment. And that would have been a really nice callback to that as well. Like, it was a really happy reunion. And then to repeat that when it's a separation would have been interesting to see. It would have thrown back in our minds to, like, the relationship between them and sort of rekindled that and made us more aware of it again, whereas they just kind of decided to ignore that entirely and send Ghost off because they don't have the budget anymore. But they definitely do, because they've killed off 2 out of 3 dragons. Like, you know, take the Rhaegal budget and funnel it into Ghost, because I like Ghost.
Direwolves aren't just for winter.
Not just for Christmas. I do think we also have to talk about, when we're talking about Jon, we definitely have to talk about the issue of his heritage now that more people are knowing about it. Trust Sansa Stark to tell a secret in like 10 seconds that her dad kept for nearly 2 decades, but whatever. It's going to throw some more spanners in the works, I think, especially now that it's putting this level of tension on Jon and Daenerys' relationship, because I have an issue with that whole scene of like her going to him and begging him to keep it quiet, because they made a point of saying Daenerys has never begged for anything, which is, as far as I remember, true. I don't remember her ever begging for anything, and I think that is significant that she chose to do that for Jon. But the whole reason of her begging was because she cares. This is supposed to be like the first relationship where she's actually experiencing love. Like, she didn't love Khal Drogo, she didn't love Daryn Harris, she loved Jorah, but as a brother or a friend. Like, she's consistently been sort of incapable of the romantic love that she's constantly being portrayed as involved in. And I thought that this was sort of the first instance of us seeing her really genuinely in love. And then the second that didn't work out, she snapped back to sort of Mad Queen Daenerys, like just demanding his silence, which was really strange. It was like she's sort of pulling rank on him.
And why can't Jon and Daenerys see that them getting married is the most logical thing to do?
Right? It's not going to be the first time someone's married their aunt or their cousin. Or like, Tywin was married to his cousin. Jaime and Cersei are a whole other entity, but it's a thing that happens. And in this world, like, it's weird for us as an audience because it's not a thing that, like, we approve of, but in that world, it's a totally normal thing to marry cousin to cousin and, like, niece to nephew and all that kind of stuff.
The Targaryens historically married brother to sister for decades.
Well, exactly.
Keep the bloodline pure.
Exactly, and essentially that would be what they were doing now. Like, I don't understand why sort of that plan that Tyrion's considering right now of having them rule together, have Jon be sort of her voice of reason so that she doesn't go full Mad King, and he doesn't have to sort of shoulder the burden of that responsibility that he doesn't really want anyway. Like, it's a perfectly sort of viable plan. It would have been so easy for that to just happen, and instead she goes off on this whole, like, no, it's my power, it's my throne. She went sort of really Viserys on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely playing into my opinion that Daenerys is a bad guy, and it's not going to end well if she sits on the throne at the end of all this. Like, she will be Queen of the Ashes, I think, if she gets that far. But I just don't understand why it had to be such a big deal.
I find it really weird that this is the lowest rated Game of Thrones episode.
I can definitely list a couple others that I would have put lower.
I don't think, like, on IMDb, this is a 6.7.
Which is low for Thrones.
I don't think I've ever seen it go beneath a solid, like, 7.8 for an episode before.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever... Game of Thrones has always been a show that has delivered on spectacle and characterization. It's always been really sort of on point with everything it was trying to do, and it feels like they sort of rushed into the Night King situation and resolved it quite quickly. And now they're sort of fumbling for where to go before they jump into the next big battle. It'll pick back up. I think this was just sort of a weird transition episode where they weren't entirely sure how to deal with, like, the massive loss that came before it and the massive loss that will follow.
They don't really linger on the aftermath of the previous episode for very long, though. Like, we theorised that the clear-up of Winterfell was going to be a big part of the episode, and they get it out of the way within the first 5 minutes?
Yeah, they don't really handle it how I thought they would.
And it feels very rushed. It's like, oh, okay, all the funeral pyres are already set up. Everybody go pick a person to stare sadly at for a bit and set them on fire.
I do like the sort of allocation of who burns who, though. I thought that was... like, obviously Dany was going to burn Jorah, and Sansa was always going to burn Theon. But the choice of sort of Jon to look at Lyanna Mormont was a bit of a weird one. Like, I know that she was kind of the person that gave him his crown as King in the North, but she's also recently been a person who's challenged him quite a lot. And I kind of thought it would be more like Arya with Lyanna and Jon with Beric, because, like, yes, Beric was the one that protected Arya. He was something of a barricade in that situation, but it was... I always thought that, like, Jon, who has more sort of connection to Beric, and Arya and Lyanna Mormont have always both been parallels of the same sort of character that came before in Lyanna Stark. I thought that that would be a connection that would be drawn between them in the last time that we see Lyanna. But it was... I don't know, I just kind of thought that like there should have been more of a memorial made to all of the characters that we lost. I also kind of didn't see them burning any White Walker bodies. I know that the Night King sort of did a Voldemort and shattered, but, you know, as far as I can tell, Viserion is still just sitting in a heap in the middle of Winterfell, and all of the Whites, like, I can understand if they were all on the funeral pyres, but you would think that, like, this would have been Daenerys' last chance to actually properly say goodbye to Viserion.
Clearly at this point she does not care about her dragon.
Well, obviously, she barely blinked when Rhaegal died, but I thought that would be sort of more of an emotional reaction to her. But like, you're right, the dragons seem to be becoming less and less significant for Daenerys. Like, with the first loss, you kind of saw it in her eyes that like, it was a hard hit to take that she lost Viserion. But then Rhaegal died and fell into the water and she sort of flew away.
That whole scene is another really unceremonious one. It's like, if you wanted to kill another dragon, you just had a really cool battle to do it with. And it's, I don't know, the whole thing feels like it's building up to a big fight, and then we get to skip it again because Tyrion gets knocked out. It's comical at this point, Tyrion's plot armor, an ability to not get involved in the fight because he spent it knocked out. Also, he would have drowned.
Yeah, straight up.
He's an unconscious man in the water. He can't swim. He'll drown.
Like, I understand clearly there are some budget constraints happening this season. You know, Ghost has fallen victim to them. That's probably why they killed Rhaegal too. It's just like, then we only have to fund one dragon. But, like, come on.
I hate the fact that Euron was the one who killed Rhaegal as well. Not because of, oh, it's Euron, he shouldn't have been able to kill him. More because it's Euron, he's weirdly obsessed with dragons. He wouldn't want to kill it, he'd want to have it.
Yeah, he'd want to keep it.
And I guess they're trying to make Euron less likeable. It's like, oh no, he killed a dragon, maniacally laughing, but he's already mean enough, really.
That's my main issue with it, is that it doesn't add anything to anything. Daenerys doesn't react to it, so it's not providing her with any motivation. She's not now sort of so filled with fury that she's going to find a way to kill Cersei this episode. She didn't. We saw that. She just kind of had a chat and left. It doesn't make Euron any more dislikable because we already know he's a sadistic, insane person. We've seen that from the way he's treated Yara and his weird obsession with having sex with Cersei. Like, we already know that Euron is thoroughly dislikable, so it doesn't add to that in any way. Rhaegal's death in itself was so sort of unceremonious and pointless that it doesn't even really make a difference to the sort of tactical decisions that they're going to make, because they've all already been made. If this was Daenerys flying ahead as like a scouting party, then yes, it would make sense, because she'd fly back to King's Landing and be like, we have to rethink our tactics because I've lost another dragon to the same sort of projectile weapon that killed the first, and now we need to find a way to use the dragons where they're not going to be under that risk. But Jon and everybody are already on their way to King's Landing. They're just taking the longer route. So there's nothing that she can do. She can't exactly fly back to the King's Road and find them halfway along it and be like, all right, guys, we're going to head back to Winterfell because I didn't think this through. There's nothing that she can do. Also, I love the fact that she's now just presumably camping out for 2 weeks waiting for Jon to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, surely if you're gonna sort of send people on different routes that take different amount of times, but you're planning on like an assault when you get there, surely she would just wait behind a couple days, maybe try and like become friends with some people in the north because they're still not sort of massive fans of her. Like, she doesn't think any of this through, and she's turning away all of her most trusted advisors and rebelling against sort of outside powers like Sansa and Jon because she's afraid that somehow they'll step in and take things away from her, when really they should, because she shouldn't have them. She's not proven herself to be any kind of ruler. She's proven herself to be her father's daughter. So we've talked about what happened this week. In terms of next week, we know from our director that it's going to be another really big battle. So who do we think is going to die?
My main one's Grey Worm. He's the head of the army. You know, he's going to be front and foremost. He basically almost died in the last one. And I think it would make sense, especially he's now going to fight recklessly, given that one of his biggest motivations has suddenly been decapitated. I don't know. Basically, everybody's fair game at this point, really.
I have a couple people that I'm not 100% that yes, they will die, but I kind of feel that if they did die, it would further the story. And those are Jaime and Drogon. Jaime is riding off to somebody who has taken out a hit on him. So he's either going to come back and she's going to sort of welcome him back in with open arms because they're twins who shag and it's weird. Or she's going to do what I think she's going to do, which is just be Cersei about it and realize the convenience of a man who she's taken a hit out on appearing at her doorstep and just have the mountain off him, really. My other thing with Drogon is that Dany has proven that she's using her children more as tools than as children now. And I think that it's going to be a last sort of Hail Mary for Drogon. She's going to fly in filled with rage about her decapitated friend and is just, Drogon's going to get it. I think Dany is going to be challenged to see out the rest of the season and the rest of the fight of the Game of Thrones without her biggest weapon.
So I think next week the deaths are going to come in the form of the Cleganes. And I think Clegane Ball's finally going to happen. And I can see both of them basically killing each other off. Like, the mountain is going to mortally wound the Hound, and then the Hound is going to kill the mountain. I hope it's with fire. That's what I really want. I want him to burn the mountain. I want him to burn the mountain down.
It would be very cool if the Hound got the mountain in some kind of, like, stranglehold or, like, some kind of hold where he couldn't get away and then just yelled Dracarys.
I don't know if it's going to be this week or the week after, but I also feel like Euron's going to die. I'm kind of hoping it's at the hands of Jaime. Like, jealous boy getting really jealous, killing Euron, and then him and Cersei having a thing.
I do think that Euron's going to die. I do agree with you there. But I think it's going to be that, like, Daenerys has just lost Rhaegal. She's just lost, presumably, a large portion of her people that were on boats because the boats sank and about 8 people washed up. So I think she's going to summon a fleet from the Iron Islands, from Yara, and Yara's going to get her chance and take out Euron in sort of Theon's honour now that he can't. I do think that Euron's going to die. If not this week, then soon. He's not going to make it to the last episode, I don't think.
That's all we have time for today, and we hope you enjoyed. If you have any questions, you can either drop us a voice message on Anchor or tweet us at @the_tasty. Thanks for listening, and we shall see you again soon.